There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve. Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 752, April 2nd, 2018. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and racing regards from Kentucky coal mine to the California sunshine. Back to you, Mr. Bobby McGee of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, is Fernando way overconfident? Why isn't everybody happy for Haas? And is it over for Williams? And just a reminder, this week's special interview, the original F1 Weekly listener, and now, motorsports journalist extraordinaire, Christopher DeHardy. And we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. We have some talking points about Fury over Ferrari B. But, of course, you want to start with Nando. So what say you on Nando and his overhyped and overconfident?
Well, I'm concerned. Overhyped, overconfident. You know what that leads to?
Yeah, but the guy, or should I say, Omri always delivers. And I think his top five finish was fantastic. Was a high five moment of the race for me and also for a lot of people. And I think they will be punching in the top three very soon.
I'm hoping you're correct, but me, after 10 years of skepticism, suffering in the guttural area, and Flavio texting me every day, I'm just so frightened, Ness.
And, you know, here is more positive. The European season starts where?
In España, el machismo.
Yes, some would say Catalonia, but, you know, we'll stay out of the Iberian politics for now.
Thank you, Nasser.
No, I think this is the opening race was very encouraging. I know McLaren had some issues in preseason testing. Looked like the Honda Gremlins were rolling into Renault Package, but it was very impressive in Australia. And I'm really interested in seeing how Stoffel Vandoorne will hang on to Nando all season long, because this is a serious make or break year for him with Lando Norris knocking on the door.
Well, I think Stoffel Vandoorne will be pumped up. And, you know, when you have a faster teammate, that makes you faster.
Yes, and you have to stay in the game. So this is all very exciting. And what are you looking forward in the Bahraini Grand Prix, Senor, as far as Nando is concerned?
Sand, sand, and more sand.
So sandbagging would be par for the course for the top teams?
Everybody will be sandbagging.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how Haas can keep on going. And talking of Haas, you know, there's a lot of fury over Ferrari B, as they're calling it. And there is a lot of B&M, and we're not talking Bavarian Motors here, over the performance of Haas F1 in the opening round in Australia. I can understand the complaining. After all, this is Formula One. But these Idaho screamers need to realize the team is operating under rules and regulations. According to team boss Gunther Steiner, relationship with Ferrari is well above the board. It is no secret that Haas designs the car, which is built by Dallara, and the Ferrari technical partnership was announced well before the team made their F1 debut in 2016 with Romain Grosjean and Esteban Gutierrez. Steiner has even challenged McLaren and Force India, the two biggest complainers, to file a complaint with FIA at this weekend's Bahrain Grand Prix. Do you think this brouhaha will die down, or is there more to the story?
No, I think it's going to die down for sure. It's ridiculous. they've just done a better job.
Yes, they have outsmarted quite a few foxes who thought they were very clever. But I think, you know, once these other teams finish, especially if they're finishing ahead of Haas F1, then it would look very, very silly to complain then.
Absolutely.
Are you satisfied with the performance of Mr. K-Mag? Because Romain Grosjean is their love child.
I am. I think K-Mag is actually doing a very, very good job. And I think Romain Grosjean needs to pick up his je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, this is his third year with the team.
Exactly. I mean, come on. Let's get Danica in the team.
Yeah, well, she'll be available after the Indy 500. I have an idea when we talk about Williams. You said, is it over for Williams? So now we go to Jeff is giggling over Hartley in GP. And this is what he gave an interview. There was some show in Paris, you know, before the Paris Heat pre coming up. So this is what Jean-Eric once said, and I quote, "It makes me laugh that Red Bull called on Hartley, given that he's the one they fired to give me his seat in World Series by Renault," unquote. Jeff, as he has known, had an impressive career in junior Formula A before arriving in Formula One. Who knows, perhaps he would have done a better job at Mothership, that is Red Bull, than Kvyat. But that's how motor racing is. What he is saying now can only be construed as sour grapes from the Loire Valley, not something Nancy Sinatra would call summer wine. Your thoughts on mumblings by a fellow Francais?
Hey, when you're not in Formula One, you're pissed off. Especially when you think you need to be in Formula One, and you deserve to be Formula One. To be honest with you, Jean-Éric Vergne, Brandon Hartley, either one would have done a similar job.
As Kvyat?
Correct.
Yeah. And the thing, you know, the opportunity that Jeff had alongside Ricciardo, I mean, he really had to blow him out of the water to stamp his authority, which he did not do. Just like, you know, Scott Speed and with Antonio Liuzzi did not blow each other out, so they ended up both outside the F1 orbit. So that's the way it is. But then, you know, I mean, Jean-Eric won. Maybe he should have picked up the phone and called Dr. Marco and say, "I'm a different driver now."
He should have said that, and he should have said, "I have new motivation."
Yes, exactly. I spent a week in Avignon, had lunch with Jean Alesi. I have new motivation. Hire me, please.
That's the way it is.
But that's a very, very rare thing that Red Bull has done, giving somebody a seat back after, what, like many, many years. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but they were running out of bullets, you know, so they had to put somebody there.
I understand.
Okay, so you want to talk about the future of Williams?
Williams is over.
What? Why do you say that?
They've dug a big hole, and it's going to be really hard to get out of it and fill it up.
Well, that hole is full of millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, but they don't understand how to win.
Well, here's the idea for them. How about hiring Carmen Jordá as a test driver? That will really have they will be on a serious triple streak here.
I can dig it, my brother.
Yes. But it remains to be seen. But I was really hoping that they will have some sort of an uptick some months after Paddy Lowe coming on board. But unfortunately, it's not showing in terms of performance on the track, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think they got Paddy Lowe a little too late. He's a little older and none the wiser.
Yes. Okay, talking of future, let's talk about the Formula One and the future. After only 5 overtakes in the Australian Grand Prix after the opening lap, F1 race director Charlie Whiting has said that producing cars that are easier to follow and promote overtaking are a priority for 2021. Gee, what took them so long? FIA and FOM, under the guidance and help of Ross Brawn and Pat Simmons, are working on a program to develop a car that would be easier to follow than they have been in the past, as seen, of course, in Australia. They really need to make Formula One a driver's championship and not an engineer's championship. The former Ferrari chief and owner of his own F1 team had this to say, and I quote, There's almost a force field that exists at the moment, a bubble around each car, and the car attacking it. It can get near it because as soon as it gets within 1.5 to 2 seconds of the car in front, it loses so much performance it can get near, end of quote. This is very, very sad to have this situation at the top pinnacle of motor racing. But I say, given Ross Brawn's impressive credentials and the team of experts he has assembled, I am sure they will come up with some great ideas to make F1 racing close and combative, much like in Formula 2 and Indy cars. But these series do not have the politics and self-serving interests of the pinnacle of sport. As one journalist famously said, teams cannot agree on which day of the week it is. It will be interesting to see the cage rattling that will follow from the main power players, Signor Marchione and the Wolfman Jack of Formula 1, Toto. How do you think this thing will work out, all these new rules and ideas?
Well, first of all, this thing about overtaking is completely ridiculous. In the 80s, in the 90s, early 2000, there was not a bunch of overtaking. Sometimes there would be seldomly very few overtakes. But when they happened, it was exciting. I mean, if they want to go back to Dijon 79, well, we got to go. Anybody could build any engine within a certain limit, 3 liters or under. We've got to say, get rid of all the downforce issues and let's go racing. Other than that, you know, this overtaking thing is ridiculous. I mean, come on. I think the American spectator has gotten a lot of leeway in this. I mean, years ago, we didn't talk about how there was little overtaking. When it happened, it was exciting, but nevertheless, you know, strategy, refueling, tires. See, we've lost a lot of that. We have no refueling. We could use a tire war. Those are all variables that are gone. Maybe we should bring those back into the sport.
Well, you know, if you look at the front wing of these cars, the barge board and all these things, I remember this was several years ago when Kimi was at McLaren. And I mean, now here's a guy with immense racing talent. And I remember he was trying to pass somebody for the lead, could not. And he said, as soon as I get close, you know, I lose all the front end grip. So they have created these engineering marvels, which are really screwing up motor racing. And I was thinking earlier today, you know, I have a circle of few friends, and these are people who've been following Formula One since the 50s and 60s, and you know, almost all of them, they don't even watch Formula One races now. It's I mean, without that sound that we used to love, for me to go to a Formula One race, I mean, if we were not doing these interviews and all that, that charm is gone, you know. The thrill is gone, as Mr. B.B. King would say. So we want Ross Brawn to bring the thrill back. Bring loud engines, simplify these engine rules, and have cars that can race close by. I mean, if you look at the Formula 2 GP2 races, man, sometimes these guys are going 3 or 4 into a corner. It's really, really dog-eat-dog work. I do agree with you. We do not want a NASCAR-style pass 3 times in a lap, and the lap is half a mile. I mean, this is not what we want in Formula 1.
No.
But when you have drivers of caliber of Lewis and Sebastian, I mean, if it was one guy, I can understand. But all the way from Kimi to Nando to Sebastian Vettel, at that level, they're saying, I need a car to be 2 seconds faster before I can make a pass when the guy is just right behind him. Obviously, we have a problem here, Houston.
Houston, build 1994 spec cars with 2020 engines.
Yeah, and you know, I was looking on this website. I'm pretty sure it's an April Fool joke that there was a logo of F1 or logo in the shape of a GP1 that a Grand Prix 1 series is being launched and names have been registered and, of course, being led by Bernie Ecclestone. Have you looked into this? Did you read this?
I saw it. I thought it was fake news.
Yeah, that's what I think because, you know, I did not see it on any of these reliable services like Autosport or Motorsport, so I think it is hocus pocus.
Bravo.
Forward to another ESPN Formula One broadcast.
Looking forward to it. Getting so pumped up, I'm going to make a beet salad.
I thought you were going to have some falafel since the race is in Arabia.
No, I'm going to have beet salad so I can bleed all over myself.
There you go. What else do you want to talk about, sir?
Well, you know, I'm concerned about Fernando being so confident. You know, I've seen this before, and it usually tells me that we're going down.
When was the last time you saw him being pumped and he went down?
Honda.
No. Abu Dhabi 2000, what is it, 10?
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that it's still amazing that Sebastian Vettel did not lead the championship at any time except after the final race. And that's when it counted. And I still remember how much the media was saying that Red Bull should get behind Mark Webber and Dr. Marko and Dietrich Mateschitz. They said, no, we're going to let these people race. And I thought they will lose the championship to Nando. And boy, that came through from nowhere.
Yep. That's Formula One right there in a package.
Yeah, that is very true. Very true.
Yep. But at least we have Bahrain, McLaren looking competitive. So we'll see. I say Fernando and Machismo on the podium.
Yeah, I knew they have a couple of long straights in Bahrain where they can use the DRS thingy. So it should be an exciting race.
Exciting? It's going to be fantastic.
And it's a nighttime race. I do like this race in the nighttime, by the way.
Do you?
Yeah, this race, I said. Oh, by the way, I just saw an item a few minutes ago that, and this is something we, you know, F1 Weekly discussed last year. They are thinking of doing a qualifying race on Saturday to bring in new crowd and, you know, create excitement. And the result of the qualifying race, as they do it in Blancpain series and some other series, will determine the grid for Sunday's main event. Do you like that, sir?
I would like that. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, I would love to see that, like a 30-minute sprint race, go like crazy, and let's see what happens.
Yes, let's see what happens.
Yeah, they're worried, you know, all the changes that have been happening in Formula One the last 7-8 years, they have gone downhill, 101 South, you know, all the way to Tijuana. But I think they need to make some changes that are positive. And you're never going to please everybody, but at least, you know, people say, oh, man, finally something good.
Absolutely.
I think he's going to win a race this year. I have a feeling.
I have a feeling, too. And you know what's that going to do to the entire the entire world?
It will be one of the biggest sporting news, that's for sure.
It's going to be big, my baby. It's going to be... The boys are back in town.
Yeah, there's a car dealership here, and all their advising, they always say, it's huge. So it's going to be huge. Even when he gets on the podium, it's been quite a while, huh?
I can't even remember. I think it was Ferrari 2010?
Yeah, Ferrari 2010. I believe so.
Yep.
Since then, it's just been downhill. Remember when with Honda at one race... During qualifying, Nando and Jenson Button walked up to the podium to reminisce how it used to be in glory days.
Uh-huh, the fake podium.
Yeah, my brown car and my Mile 7 Renault, Flavio.
Bravo, Flavio. Yeah, everybody's reminiscing. I'm reminiscing every fucking day.
Yeah, he really has made a serious hash brown of his career, I have to say.
Well, that's what happens. Bad management and everything else.
I was thinking yesterday, Clark, let me tell you. You remember he made that deal with Ron Dennis behind Flavio's back, his own deal. Mm-hmm. I am convinced to this day that none of his problems would have happened had he gone through Flavio, because Flavio would have made sure, just like Willie Weber used to do for Michael Schumacher, who my teammate will be, I am numero uno, I am this, I am that. Not having that sharp fox on his side when he did that contract, I think created a lot of problems for him.
Absolutely. Without Flavio, you're nobody.
No, but these things happen. It's his case study is pretty, pretty interesting, you know. I mean, this guy could have won so many championships and so many races.
But
that's the way it is.
Hey, he's won a lot of championships in my heart.
No, he wins in your heart every year, right?
Every year. Los Machos. Yeah. Oh, Nasser. See, now I'm getting sad.
Well, you know, the race is in Middle East, so it will be, you know, when are we going to see the first action? Late Thursday night, I believe?
Something like that, Nas. Keep up the good work. Yeah, Bahrain, the sand, the lights. So exciting.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, why don't we take a quick break? And we'll be back with a goodie bag and Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call, 850-421-8461, and tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair, right on the corner, right on the price, 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world in the Motorsports Mondial segment with our bloody host, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, chap. Well, you know, I'm going to start by putting a smile on your face and on the face of our good friend, Mr. Larry Carter. Hopefully, believe it or not, the two-legged Rubinho is back. But this time, he's much younger but still quick. Eduardo Barrichello, also known as Dudu, and of course son of Rubinho, Rubens Barrichello, will race this year in the U.S. Formula 4. So I think they're going to have a race somewhere here in Florida, Homestead, or whatever. This might be a good opportunity to go and find out where all the skeletons are at Ferrari when Rubens Barrichello was teammate to Schumacher. Yeah, have you heard this story before?
No, I have not. This is an exclusive to F1Weekly.com.
Yeah, and you know, there was not a lot of motor racing this past weekend. I mean, you can judge there was not even a NASCAR race. But the British Formula 3 Championship got going at Oulton Park, which is a very nice track. Mr. Brazier and I have been there a few times. And you remember this British kid, Billy Munger, very young kid who had a vicious accident, lost the use of his lower parts of his both legs?
Yes.
He is now racing in British Formula 3. I mean, incredible determination from this kid. And he was on the podium in the first race. So all the best to him and very, very inspirational and motivational, I must say. Now, the second of the three races of the weekend was won by Manuel Maldonado. Yes, he is also from Venezuela. The apricot doesn't fall far from the tree. And he is a cousin of the man who won for Williams the last time they won a Grand Prix. Can you believe that?
Crashado, crashado, crashado.
Exactly. Now, you know, Clark, since the next race is in Arabia, Bahrain, I think we should do a goodie bag, and this is called Grand Prix Racing in Arabia from Maghreb to Yas Marina. The history of Grand Prix racing in Arab countries goes back more than 70 years. Long before there were F1 races in Bahrain and Abu Dhabi steel cage domes, there was a Grand Prix at Tripoli and at Carthage in Tunisia. The deal was simple. Motorsports followed where the French and the Italians invaded nations in North Africa, which was, you know, quite a common theme many, many years ago. Okay, Morocco was the first Arab nation to host an F1 race in 1957, which was a non-championship race in the streets of Casablanca, and was won by a French driver, Jean Beira, in a Maserati. Back in the day, if a country wanted to host an F1 championship race, they were required to host a non-championship race to prove they can do the real thing in the following year. This day and age, all you have to do is write a $45 million check to Formula One management, and if this does not bounce, you have a Grand Prix. But going back to the first Casablanca Championship Grand Prix in 1958, this turned out to be its last also. The race was the final round of the championship and was going to crown the first English world champion. It was going to be Stirling Moss in a Van Wall or Mike Hawthorn in a Ferrari. Moss had to win the race, which he did. Phil Hill from Santa Monica, California, was running second in his Ferrari, but late in the race he went bogey on his teammate Hawthorn. Here's looking at you, kid, and let him pass to finish second and grabbed the title. And since then, you know, Burton has produced more world champions than any other nation. The race saw a fiery accident for another British driver, Stuart Lewis Evans, who died of his burn injuries a few days later in London. His manager was a used motorcycle and car dealer by the name of Bernard Ecclestone. So the Emperor goes back many, many decades, which is very, very impressive and really speaks for his passion for motor racing. From Morocco, we go to their next-door neighbor for the Battle of Algiers. And talking of Battle of Algiers, maybe coincidence or whatever, I watched this movie on the web for the first time last night. A very interesting. Have you ever seen this?
No, sir.
Very, very nicely done with music by Signor Ennio Morricone, which was quite a surprise. Okay, back to the Algerian Grand Prix. Between 1928 and 1937, there were seven Grand Prix races in Algeria. All were won by Bugattis. Winner of the first two races was Marcel Lehu, and the last three events were won by Jean-Pierre Vimille. He was a very famous French driver of that era who was later killed in practice for the 1949 Buenos Aires Grand Prix, which, of course, was a, you know, big 1949, not a championship Formula One race. Okay, from Algeria, the sands of time take us to the Tunis Grand Prix. The first Tunis Grand Prix was held at the Le Bardo street circuit in 1928 and was won by the Bugatti of Marcel Lehu, a French driver based in Algeria. If you look at racing history historical books, his nationality is listed as Algerian. Tazio Nuvolari won the race in 1933 when it was held at the Carthage street circuit. In 1936, German Rudolf Caracciola was the winner in a Mercedes. Now, this is very interesting, Clark, and this really got my juices flowing, and it has now come to the top of my bucket list. Check this out. Some years ago, Motorsports Historic Festival was held at the Belvedere Park circuit near Tunis or around Tunis. Another landmark at this park are the tunnels excavated to shelter the headquarters of Field Marshal Rommel of the Africa Corps. Isn't that something historical?
Very, very historical, sir.
Yes, sir. And, you know, as a fan of history, and there are some other things that I would like to see in my life, and this really got my attention. Okay, now we come to Tripoli Grand Prix. This race ran from 1925 to 1940. Nuvolari was the winner in 1928 in a Bugatti. In 1933, the race was held at the new Milaha Lake Circuit, which was over 8 miles in length. Achille Varzi, another great Italian driver from the pre-war era, was the winner in his Bugatti. This circuit, which no longer exists, was the Paul Ricca or the Yas Marina of its time. There is some fantastic footage of this track on YouTube, which is highly recommended. Deutschenfahrer Hermann Lang won three in a row with Mercedes from 1937 to 1949. And this is the gentleman I met at Laguna Seca many moons ago, a moment I will cherish as long as I'm breathing. The last Tripoli Grand Prix was in 1940, was won by Giuseppe Farina in an Alfa Romeo. 10 years later, he would win the first F1 championship race at Silverstone. So I guess motor racing is life. The more things change, the more they remain the same. So there you have it, a little goody falafel bag of motorsports in Arabia.
That's fantastic, Nass. Keep up the good work. And you know, I started thinking maybe we should get Bugatti back in Formula One.
Yeah, well, it's owned by Volkswagen, so, you know, who knows? They might. Yeah, that would be very nice, a blue car, Bugatti. You know, talking of Algeria, there was a many, many years ago when I was living back home, Time magazine had a cover story on Grand Prix racing. And if I remember correctly, it was 1981. They had, if I remember correctly, it was Gilles Villeneuve's Ferrari on cover. And I'll never forget, the story started with three names. It was the typical, you know, Juan Manuel Fangio, Jim Clark. And the third name I had never heard at that time, it was Guy Moore, okay? And later I found out this guy was of, you know, French heritage, but he, in historical books, is listed as a racing driver from Algeria. Marcel Lehu was the one who saw him in Algeria, brought him to France, and he was very, very quick right off the bat. And then he won the Monaco Grand Prix for Scuderia Ferrari, and then was killed in a Grand Prix race in Pescara at a very young age, but he went through like a rocket. And when Gilles Villeneuve joined Ferrari, Enzo Ferrari made a comment that Gilles Villeneuve reminds him of two drivers he had, Nuvolari and Guy Moll. So you can imagine how talented this Guy Moll was. For many, many years later, Enzo Ferrari to make a reference to him, talking about Gilles Villeneuve, and we all know how exciting he was.
He's off. He's back again.
Yeah. So there's a lot of history there, man, which I really, really love.
I understand the love. No, very exciting, Nas. Keep up the good work. I'm very proud of you for bringing us up to date on the history of motorsports.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. And, I have a friend. He's from Kiel in Germany, Mr. Jan Muller. And he's the one who, if you do a Google search on Didier Pironi, there is a very nice website dedicated to Didier Pironi with a lot of information. He is the one handling that. And he, like us, and a very passionate fan of history of motor racing. So some years ago when I went to Interstop, he asked me if he could join the party, which he did. And, of course, he was welcome. And then some years ago, he was making a trip to these North African countries, and he wanted to go to all these tracks. And I got an email from him one day that I cannot find any information on the Milaha Lake Circuit, but you probably know where I can find this. So I wrote back to him. I said, hey, man, don't worry. It turned into a Air Force and an airfield, so the track is no longer there. But if you watch it on YouTube, you will see what a fantastic facility it was.
I think it's time to introduce this wonderful person that you interviewed. And, of course, he is the original F1 Weekly listener. We have brought him up. And now a fantastic motorsports journalist, Nas, introduced this interview.
Yeah, like they had the Cambridge 5. If we were to do the F1 Weekly 5, Chris DiHardi would be one of our main guys. He was one of the original, very dedicated to motor racing, still listens to F1 Weekly. And it's always a pleasure to meet him. I met him and his lovely folks in New Orleans when I was moving here from New Mexico. And I see him regularly at Sebring and also Daytona. And hopefully our paths will cross again. So it's always a great pleasure to see him. I love his enthusiasm for IndyCar racing and motorsports in general. So we had a nice chat. And I wish him all the best. And, of course, I want to see him keep climbing the motorsports ladder.
Young man, name and please.
Christopher DiHardi, the Daytona International Speedway for the Rolex 24. We're about an hour and a half to almost 2 hours until the green flag. It's a great day. Great weather out here, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Okay, folks, that, of course, is Christopher DiHardi, one of the original listeners of F1 Weekly, still going strong. Good to see you, young man. How are you today?
Fantastic. Recently I actually listened to the conversation we had at St. Petersburg last year, and it's amazing what things have taken place in the world of motorsports, and particularly in IndyCar racing, and what I also covered, the Maserati Road to Indy as well in that time. It's been fantastic so far. How are you doing, Nasser?
I'm doing very good, sir. Always good to be at a racetrack in this perfect place to start the season. Before we talk about the world, let's talk about life and times of Christopher DiHardi. I understand you have moved from Luling, Louisiana to Sulphur, Indiana.
Just a little bit outside of Indianapolis, yes. I moved back in July of last year to Indiana, just outside of Indianapolis, up in Noblesville. A very, very close friend of mine said, yeah, come on up. He's been awesome. He's been great. And it's been awesome. I've been having to work around a couple of things. I've only 45 minutes from the speedway. It's fantastic. I don't have to use my GPS to get there, thankfully. I've transferred up to where I'm working up there now, and I've been covering some stuff for the Noblesville Daily Times. So I've been able to make things work up there. It's been good. It's been really good.
What's it like being rent for the first time in life?
Well, and that's the second time. I did live in an apartment right outside of LSU. So, but outside of the state of Louisiana, it's been a big adjustment. I mean, it's a lot colder up near Indianapolis. So I've had to really get used to that. But I mean, I prefer the cold to the heat by far. It's been okay.
Well, that's where we disagree big time. I prefer the heat over the cold, but to each his own.
Well, the way I look at it is, in the cold, I can always keep piling on more and more and more clothes and more and more and more layers. But in the heat, I can only take off so much before they decide to arrest me.
Okay, but to each his own, like I said.
Of course.
Okay, very good to see that you're following your path, pursuit of passion. So tell us, like you said, what has happened since last year? Let's start with the Mazda Road to Indy.
So I spoke last year about Oliver Askew being one of the newer guys that came up in USF 2000. He had done an amazing job for Team USA. Since our chat, we had him win the championship in USF 2000 for Cape Motorsports. He won like five or so races in a row, I think it was. He finished second at the first race in St. Pete. Did an amazing job. He won his first oval race at Iowa Speedway. Great thing to see. Rinus VK, or which is phoneticized for Van Kampfelt, was a good competitor, finished second in the title. Then you look at Pro Mazda, Victor Franzoni came into the weekend at St. Petersburg with only having 4 days, knowing that he would have a drive. He got the call the previous weekend in New Orleans that he was going to, from Ricardo Yuko, saying, hey, can you drive for me? They never actually signed a contract to do Pro Mazda that year in 2017. He goes on and wins 7 races, and the other 5 races he finishes second. You can't come up with a better championship winning season than that. And then you have Indy Lights. Kyle Kaiser was the model of consistency all year long. While a lot of people were high and low here and there, he only had like one bad weekend of every race weekend that year. He did an amazing job. It was a great year for the Mazda Road to Indy, and we have 3 fantastic champions that will represent their series well as they move up.
I think Mazda is doing a great job. It is a fantastic program, and I hope more companies do that, not just here but other places also. Talking of Kyle Kaiser, he's from Northern California, as you know. How long it took him to win the Indy Lights Championship?
It took him 3 years. His first year was 2015. He made some rookie mistakes. It was an adjustment moving up from Pro Mazda from 2014. 2016, he still had a couple of mistakes, but the Road to Indy is about drivers learning their craft and honing what they can do and honing their talents. And he, 2016, he ended up winning, I think it was 2 races that year. Then comes 2017, and he did an amazing job just staying in the top 5, staying near the podium, staying on the podium, and he won a couple of races, quite a few races last year, actually, so he did a great job. What he did was he stayed on the track, and a lot of guys, you know, when they're, you can be really, really fast, but if you have too many mistakes, you're not going to win a championship if you can't finish.
The guy who has impressed me and recently coming through the Mazda Road to Indy is Spencer Piggott. Your thoughts on him?
He is the winningest driver on the Mazda Road to Indy with 24 race wins. And you look at a good racing driver. Any good racing driver will tell you that you have to have talent, you have to have speed, endurance, and all that. Any good racer will admit that a little bit of luck has to fall your way every once in a while. Mario Andretti was a fantastic driver, but when it came to luck, you couldn't buy any. For Spencer, what's amazing with him is that if it weren't for Scott Hargrove having a faulty gearbox at Sonoma in 2014 in Pro Mazda, Hargrove would have won that title. Piggott may not have wouldn't have won that title that year. He then uses that money to go to Indy Lights and wins that championship the very first year with Ricardo Juncos' team. You have to have luck in order to keep going in some ways, and really, that was it. But Piggott has shown that he can do the job. I mean, if you look at where he did last year with Ed Carpenter's team on the road and street courses in 2017, at Toronto, he was passing cars left and right. He had genuine pace, but unfortunately, a badly timed yellow did not allow him the chance to show what he was capable of doing. He had to pit underneath the caution flag after most other guys had pitted. At St. Petersburg, he was doing a fantastic job. Unfortunately, he had a brake issue during a pit stop that, you know, stopped his charge. Piggott can do a great job, and now with him being full-time in the number 21 car for Ed Carpenter Racing, I'm expecting to see some good things out of him this year. It'll be great to see how he meshes with having just one car the whole way through, instead of having, okay, I'm driving some weekends and then this weekend I'm not running at all. So we'll see some good things out of Spencer Piggott, I think, in 2018.
You know, one guy who was very impressive in the junior Formula, and I think maybe didn't get the right chance or opportunity, maybe ran out of steam at the top level. Your thoughts on this kid from Pennsylvania, Sage Caron?
I look at him, and a lot of people that I speak with hate the fact that I defend him, but in my opinion, I look at him like an early version of Tim Richmond, in that he has $1 million worth of talent, but I don't believe that it has been properly honed the right way. When Tim Richmond in NASCAR got with Harry Hyde, and they went off in 1986 and won 7 races, it was a case of, I'll listen to what you say, and I'll do what you say, and once they figured it out, they were unbeatable. When Sage gets the right person to manage him, and can hone what he can do, he will start winning races left and right. I firmly believe that. You don't win the Indy Lights Championship without having some talent behind you. And when he did it that year in 2013, granted it was a very small field, but you know, he beat Gabby Chavez, he beat Jack Hawksworth and Carlos Munoz to get to that championship. Cream will rise to the top, and I believe that with Sage, sure, he's had some mistakes. He's done some things that are less than ideal, but he has genuine pace, and I think that he needs to have one more shot to be able to show that. And I think that with Dreyer and Reinbold at the 500 a couple years ago, he did a fantastic job showing that. He started like in the back 3 or 4 rows, and he got to 6th place right past the halfway point before he walled it. But you know, with everything going the right way, he should be able to show that he's quick.
Who do you see as main favorite for the title this year in IndyCar racing?
You know, it's hard to go against Joseph Newgarden. I mean, he did a fantastic job last year for Team Penske, being that it was his very first season. If you want to go with Scott Dixon, I mean, he's won it 4 times, but honestly, I can't go against Newgarden on this one. Last year, I think he wanted to show people why Roger Penske hired him. At Barber, at Gateway, and at Mid-Ohio, he had some fantastic moves that showed people, this is why you hired me. He got past Scott Dixon with a couple of corners to go, 2/3 of the way through the race, almost muscled him out of the way to get to 2nd place behind his teammate Will Power, who had a tire go flat. At Gateway, he muscled his way past Simon Pagenaud heading into turn number 1 in a great move that had everyone in the media center going, because we didn't want Simon to go into the wall. And then at Mid-Ohio, you know, he had a great dicing deal with Power there on the backstretch heading into the Madness area. So he knows how to get the job done. He showed everybody that he wasn't a flash in the pan. And you couldn't get more American being from Hendersonville, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. He's a poster child for Penske Racing, that's for sure. The move he made on Monsieur Simon Pagenaud was very much like Max Verstappen's move, and I loved it. You know, this is racing, you know, that's what we enjoy. Talking of Joseph Newgarden, now he expressed an interest to be in Formula One, and Gunther Steiner of Haas F1 said there are no Americans good enough right now, and everybody is beating up on Gunther Steiner, from Graham Rahal to Conor Daly to, you know, whoever has any interest in racing. Your thoughts on Americans in Formula One and what will it take?
Gunther Steiner proves that sometimes some people say some very stupid things. When Jimmy Hoffa ran for president of the Teamsters Union, Jimmy Hoffa Jr., he said that his aspiration was to follow in his father's footsteps. Come on, really? Come on, Gunther Steiner, really? Come on. We have some talented Americans over here in IndyCar racing. You look at Alexander Rossi, who finished 12th with a Manor at COTA, going up near Alonso there in 2015, I believe it was. Alex Rossi had everything he needed except for money behind him, like big money behind him. You look at Joseph Newgarden. He's, in my opinion, with what he did with Team Penske, it shows that he's as talented as a lot of other guys that are running in a blue race in Formula One right now. But I have to go back to what Graham Rahal said about Scott Dixon. Even though Scott Dixon's born in Australia, claims New Zealand citizenship, if you put Scott Dixon in a Mercedes, he will give Lewis Hamilton all it can handle. And these guys over here, I don't like how a lot of people just dismiss them as being, oh, these guys aren't talented. No, they are talented. You just actually look over here every once in a while. Look at what happened when Fernando came over here. A lot of guys nowadays are looking at IndyCar racing and seeing how good these guys are. I find that it's very, very... it does a disservice to the American market to say, oh, these guys aren't good enough to get in Formula One. Well, these guys actually are good enough to get into Formula One. I mean, what was it? Phil Hill in 1961 won the world championship for the American flag. Wasn't Prost France's first F1 champion back in 84? Like, come on, guys. Let's get ourselves right here. Come on. Sainer did himself a massive disservice. I mean, you have a Haas F1, the only American, primarily American-based F1 team, coming over here and saying these kinds of things. It's not good for the United States, especially when you have a massive market over here for Mercedes, for Ferrari, for all these luxury car brands. This is their biggest market, you know? Like, let's think a little bit here. Come on. Don't do what Bernie did.
Okay, let me give you my... As you know, Gunther Steiner is from Italy, even though he has a very German name. So let me give you my due lire on this. Two lires on this, okay? I agree with you. There's talent here that can make it to Formula One if given the proper opportunity. In Formula One, as you know, as anybody knows, unless you're with the top team, you're not going to win races.
Exactly.
Just as Fernando Alonso. But here is the problem, okay? Seats are very, very limited at the top level, okay? If you are a team manager at McLaren, you, Christy Hardy, forget your background, ethnic background, racial background, and nationality and patriotism. If you are in charge of making a decision for a team, and you have young drivers through the European ladder system coming, you tell me. I'm not going to take any names, but I mean, you just tell me. If a driver comes in GP2, in a competitive field, wins the championship, and the guy who finishes second gets half the points of the other guy, and the same scenario is repeated, let's say in some other series, European Formula 3 or GP3, would you take a guy who won the championship with twice as many points as the guy who finished second?
One thing that I would be worried about in that situation is, does Oliver Askew in USF 2000 won a lot of races just going away? He didn't have the chance to develop proper racecraft. You could run up front all you want, but if you can't pass cars and get your way back to the front in case something happens, then are you really that complete of a driver?
No. Well, I'm not talking about Oliver Askew or some other guy. I asked you a question.
Oh, yeah.
I want you to answer my question.
What I'm worried about is if you have a guy that finishes up front consistently, 100%, and he's just running away with these races, what racecraft has he developed along the way? Can he pass cars? If he's just staying up front and is just out there consistently, like I mentioned with Askew, if he's just out there all the time up front, he's not having to develop situations where he has to back out and look at, okay, I need to back out of the situation because something might happen up front. Or maybe I need to time this run where I can go around this guy at this particular corner. If you're staying in first position all the time, you're not learning as much as the guy that's coming from like ninth to get up to third or ninth to get up to second. But at the end of the day, ninth to get to second, it ain't winning and you ain't getting a championship.
You still haven't answered my question.
Would I look at... Any team owner would go for the guy in first place. Any team owner would.
That's where the problem is. That's where the problem is. You know, when you you look at drivers who have come into... And again, it's not about a nationality thing.
Yeah.
If you look at... I look at it this way. Whether you're American, Australian, New Zealand, Japanese, Azerbaijan, forget all that. In the last 5 years, the talent that has come into Formula One, Esteban, we're talking about not money people.
Yeah.
We're talking about Max Verstappen, Esteban Ocon, Stoffel Vandoorne. You know, Stoffel Vandoorne hasn't done much because last year he was with Honda. Here is a kid, from what I know, ever since he came out of karting, and you can check on this, I think every series he has entered, he has won a race in his first weekend, including GP2. So you take a look at him. Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel. How many talents are out there who have done what they have done at their younger age? And that's where the problem is. So the day a kid comes from Henderson, Nevada, or Henderson, Tennessee, or Pampa, Texas, and they have a talent like this, trust me, they will get to Formula One.
You mentioned talents coming up. Jeremy Shaw has his Team USA program, and he has a driver that was driving this year from Sulphur, Louisiana, named Aaron Johnson. I mean, you talk about someone who has nothing. He was laid off from his job as an military aircraft mechanic, and according to Jeremy, was living in a trailer. He's got a problem, and everybody that I've spoken to about him and about how he drives, he says that he's probably got some of the most gifted talent of anybody that they've ever seen, but he's gotten into racing later than what most people would. I mean, he's trying to get it. He was in Lucas Oil School of Racing this past year, and he just turned 19 years old. I want to see him get to IndyCar racing. That's what his goal is, to get to IndyCar. But without a budget behind you and without a lot of corporate sponsors or wealthy donors behind you, it's very, very difficult to actually get anywhere in motorsports. And that's why he's going to try and go for Team USA again. He almost won the Maserati to Indy Scholarship Shootout back at the Firebird Raceway, which would have given him $200,000. But money fuels race cars. It's not gasoline.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned Phil Hill. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Even the 1970s was a long time ago. The way Formula One is now, good or bad is another story.
Right.
Okay. The way to get into Formula One, now we're talking about present day situation, real life. Either you have a daddy like Lance Stroll, which not many of us do, or you need to have a talent of a Max Verstappen or a Lewis Hamilton or Esteban Ocon. We talk about hard luck. I mean, if you look at the background of Esteban Ocon, he comes from nothing. Lewis Hamilton's daddy had 3 jobs just to have him race in karting. So, like you said, cream will rise to the top. But to sit and say, I'm not talking about you. Hello, you know, Joseph Newgarden raced in GP3 one season. And I have to say, you cannot just judge a driver by one season in Europe, you know. But that's what it takes to get into Formula One. I mean, I thought putting Max Verstappen after 1 year of motor racing into GP2 would be a career suicide. And they threw him in Formula One, and he pulled it off. Not many can do that. You know, and that's where I think where the thing is. And I mean, again, I don't want to take names and say, oh, this guy didn't do this, this guy didn't do that. I mean, you look at anybody who's coming into Formula One. I mean, you look at Pascal Wehrlein. I think he was the youngest DTM champion, which is very hard to win. And he has done a very good job in Formula One. But he has not blown away his teammates. So it doesn't matter if he's German or from Madagascar. You know, if you're not doing Alonso on your teammate, now granted his teammate was Alex Hume, nobody would call him Alain Prost or Kuala Lumpur, but that you have to make your mark somewhere. You can't race here. It's like saying, oh, I threw 50 touchdowns in CFL, so I should be playing for Patriots in place of Brady in the Super Bowl. It doesn't work in motor racing that. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
So anyway, final thoughts on the beautiful world of motor racing. And how are you spending all the zero checks Clark Rogers is sending you?
Oh, it got me my flight here after all. I'm looking forward to this particular year in motor racing. 2018 is going to be a great year. IndyCar has a new body kit that has made the cars look really, really nice. Supposedly they have over 2,000 pounds less downforce on the car, and you actually have to hustle them now, which was a great. It's going to be a great sign. The only downside I can see this year is that Scott Pruitt's retiring, and that's going to be a shame. But he's going to be able to spend more time with his family at home that he said hi to.
Yeah,
yesterday.
Exactly. I was going to say that.
The Speedway people present him with a book about his career, and it was great to see the different pictures that they had. And I only saw maybe a couple, but he's retiring. We had a massive change up with NASCAR as well. IndyCar is going through a bit of a change with everything, but I'm looking forward to this year in motor racing. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, you need to tell our listeners what you've been writing, where they can read your stuff.
Okay.
You need to plug yourself.
Okay, cool. So I've done a lot of work with Motorsports Tribune, motorsportstribune.com. Don't put www in front because it won't show up. I actually learned that the hard way last year at St. Petersburg. IndyCar.com. I've had some articles appear there as well. And if you're looking for anything with high school sports, I've done some stuff with the Noblesville Daily Times at the Times24-7.com. Although it's few and far between, it's once every couple of weeks I do something over there. But yeah, it's mostly Motorsports Tribune and IndyCar.com. And Nasser, once again, thank you so much for the very wonderful calendar. You've done a great job on the 2018 calendar this year.
Another zero on your check, man. Thank you so much. And it's always a great pleasure talking to you. I wish you all the best. And we continue to meet at racetracks around USFA.
The pleasure's all mine, Nasser. Thank you.
Thank you.
Christopher, keep up the good work. And once again, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. The check's in the mail, my young man. And Nasser, there you have it. Boy, this Milaha Lake circuit in Tripoli must have been fantastic.
Are you looking at it?
I am. I'm there.
Yeah. Some of the video is fantastic, man.
Yep. Where are we now?
You tell me.
We're in Bahrain.
Bahrain. Yes, sir. The island nation.
Yeah. So, any predictions, please?
Yeah, it's going to be this, more of the same, Clark. And what we want to see is, you know, for an exciting championship, we do not want any of these drivers to get a 30-point, 40-point lead. And then it becomes sort of boring. So who knows, maybe Max Verstappen win, Lewis second, and Sebastian third, and Nando fourth, one place up from last time. That would be great.
That would be great.
One thing I will say, though, if Lewis wins this race, Bottas better finish second, or he's got Toto not totally happy with him.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a big problem there, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yes.
And also, you know, the one thing I'm really looking forward to, because there are some very good young talent debuting in the Formula 2 championship. The Formula 2 series, previously known as our favorite Hapidos GP2, is starting. First round is in Bahrain. And, of course, all eyes will be on Lando Norris, a kid who has won 5 championships and 5 attempts, all in rookie attempts. And then there is George Russell, who won GP3. Now he is part of the Mercedes, a pretty tall young kid, and he's a very good racer. He will be against Lando Norris. So we'll see how it works out for all these youths.
Absolutely. And quickly, back to the Tripoli Grand Prix.
Yes, sir.
Very interesting stuff. You know, it was held in conjunction with the Libyan State Lottery.
The Italian State Lottery, and there was a big scandal 1 year also.
There was a big scandal about millions of lire
and
a fixed outcome.
Yes, sir.
I think I see the... It sounds like the Black Sox all over again.
There you go. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, Nas, outstanding. We got a race. And keep up the good work. I want to thank all the listeners and mention once again that we'll be back next week. Same place, same channel. Nas, we'll see you around.
Oh, sounds like me and Mrs. Jones. Same place, same cafe.
Bravo.
Okay, man. Thank you for your time. We appreciate your dynamic leadership. And we keep rolling.
Thank you, Nasser. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Bye-bye.